Yeah, my baby.
The Pope landed, Robert. The Pope landed.
We're going to talk now about my son. Now, when I will hear from him, I don't know just yet, because he's not staying in one place. He's moving around.
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. It seems I'm here a long time. I don't know why I'm here.
Welcome to FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show. Every week, we welcome filmmakers, actors, journalists, programmers, and others to sit down and chat about the state of independent film. Today, my guests are Pigeon Projects filmmakers Melanie Schatzky and Brian Cassidy. The couple have recently made two feature films. On the one hand, there's their documentary, The Patron Saints, a disquieting and hyper-realistic glimpse into life at a nursing home, sidestepping conventional documentary methods for a heightened cinematic approach to storytelling. Filmmakers Cassidy and Schatzky employ lyrical realism and black humor in this charged portrait of fading bodies and minds. The film had its world premiere at the 2011 Toronto International Film Festival, and you'll have an opportunity to see it on Saturday, August 4th, when Rooftop Film screens The Patron Saints at the Old American Can Factory. Their second film is the fictional indie drama Francine, which stars Academy Award winner Melissa Leo, giving a fierce and restrained performance as the title character, a woman struggling to find her place in a downtrodden lakeside town after leaving behind a life in prison. The movie uses many local actors and was shot in the Hudson Valley. I was lucky enough to see Francine last March at South by Southwest, and now you too can see it, as it will be screening on Wednesday, August 1st at 8 o'clock at the Howard Gilman Theater at Lincoln Center. So, welcome, Melanie and Brian, to FilmWax Radio. I should mention I'm in your home, and while Bebox Radio is still kind of in flux, and so it's an honor to be here. It's really nice to finally sit down again with you guys.
We are glad to have you in our home.
Thank you. Have you ever screened anything at Lincoln Center before?
No, this will be our first time.
Wow. So tell me how that came about.
Well, as we understand it, Ted Hope and Scott Foundas are behind this new series that Lincoln Center is doing called Indie Night.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure where they're finding films. I know some people recommended Francine. I think they were looking for recommendations from people mm-hmm. within the industry mm-hmm. and. Someone, I guess, whispered in their ear that Francine might be a good choice for the program.
Yeah, definitely.
Shortly thereafter, we got a call, and we were thrilled.
Well, so let's talk about Francine for a little bit. Tell me, I know we've talked about this before, but I think it's a great story that you knew you were going to film upstate New York, and you put an ad right in the local Penny Saver or something like that. No, you put an ad out, right? And go ahead, tell that story, because I could, but it's much more interesting.
Is your question how Melissa came?
Yeah, but it's an anecdote. It's a good anecdote. So
So the thing is, for our lead, for Francine, we thought we would cast a non-actor.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking to places such as diners, gas stations. We thought we might find our Francine to be someone who, in real life, was like our fictitious character. We placed an ad through the Hudson Valley Film Commission for some smaller roles.
Mm.
And Melissa happened to be on that email list and heard about our project through this ad, and then approached us to see if we would want her to be our Francine.
Right.
So it was a very kind of unusual way for, someone of that caliber to come to a project like this.
After how many rejections did you finally relent? No, it's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable story. And then you hired largely actors from the area. I mean, we call them unprofessionals, but I mean, or non-professionals, but they're not making a living, but these are tried and true actors, correct?
Right, for the most part, and then some were just people that, like, are the veterinarian
played
there
himself.
Had never acted before, had no acting aspirations. We just approached him in his veterinary practice because we liked the space itself. We thought it was very kind of cinematic, and he was game. So, and there are a few other instances of people that never had any acting aspirations whatsoever that we approached to see if they would be in the film, and you know, they were into it.
Yeah, animals do play quite a role in the movie. The movie is about this middle-aged woman who just comes out of a prison term. We're not sure why she went to jail. We're not sure exactly how long she was there. What we do know is she has a hard time transitioning out of jail. And, you know, goes through a few jobs, et cetera. Talk about, like, that whole way her sort of obsession with animals, like how that came around, because that's really kind of fascinating.
Well, the thing is, she's been so removed from kind of people in general and society in general that she just doesn't know how to connect anymore. But she does have this sort of kinship with animals, and she kind of recognizes that within herself, and at every opportunity she kind of takes in an animal and tries to kind of nurture that relationship. You know, it becomes somewhat obsessive and, you know, perhaps unhealthy, but this is the only kind of intimacy that she is comfortable with. And so, you know, she kind of pursues that avenue of collecting animals.
Brian, how did you write the script?
You know, it's funny. We wrote it together.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And,
mm-hmm.
We really went back and forth on it. I mean, in the beginning, it was a lot of conversation about... I mean, sometimes for us, a project starts with an image. Sometimes it starts with a scene that we would like to understand what its origins might be, so we work backwards from from something. And we were living upstate at the time and just started writing this project. And we kind of bounce the script back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take a pass and write some things based on conversations Melanie and I have had, and then she'll look it over and take a pass, and it just sort of bounces back and forth between us. It's funny. You get so deep into the process, and now the screenplay itself is so far behind us. I almost forget how it happened, because we came at it from a lot of different angles.
Yeah. There's an evolution that happens that's very organic.
Very much so. And also because Melanie and I, coming from a background in both fine art photography and documentary filmmaking, so much of the writing occurs while we're location scouting, and then it happens at every stage of the process. It evolves and changes. We shot the film off of a 10-page document, so we didn't have a conventional screenplay, but what we had was basically a very vivid outline of scenes, which take you, if you were to have read it, takes you very vividly through the whole story. But it reads almost more like a short story in paragraph form.
Do you find that the idea of scripting, with the expectation that the actors would say the lines as you wrote them, is that confining, or is it just unnatural to you, or were you trying to explore other things by going this route?
We're trying to explore other things. I think I don't think anything is necessarily confining or not, depending on but for this particular project. We really wanted to work with what we know and work intuitively, and we really wrote it in a way that made sense to us. I suppose that, and this is not an improvised film.
No.
In the end, actually, it's quite similar to what we had on the page at the start. I think. We wanted to just write it exactly how we wanted it to be written. And if that meant defying or not paying attention to certain kind of conventions of screenplay format, if that was a way for us to access our own ideas, then that's what we wanted to do.
Mm.
And that's how we went about it. But I don't know that it's confining.
Mm-hmm.
On another project, it's not to say that we wouldn't have it long dialogue passages and exchanges that where we'd want people to read the words exactly as they are on the page. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's project to project.
Sure, sure. One nice way to maybe transition, and we're talking, by the way, with Melanie Schatzky and Brian Cassidy, who are having quite a year with two really strong films. Francine is a fictional account of a woman played by Melissa Leo, who comes out of prison and has a very difficult time of sort of transitioning socially and otherwise. And then there's Patron Saints, which is a documentary about just an old age home, I guess one could say. And so one thing you read about with Pigeon Projects, your company, is that is blurring of the lines. And I'm sure this comes up all the time because, there are some aspects of the feel of a film like of Francine, which feels very realistic, using non-professional actors, shooting on set, you know, the spontaneity of certain scenes in terms of, at least cinematically speaking. And then there is also a movie like Patron Saints, which is very cinematic too, and, you know, isn't typical of the, certainly nothing like an advocacy film without trying to say something, making some sort of statement about a facility like the one in Patron Saints.
Well, with the Patron Saints, we spent a lot of time there, kind of on and off for a period of five mm-hmm. years. So we really got to know the residents.
Five years.
Yeah.
And remind me where they are.
That's something we've decided to not
disclose. Oh, very good. Okay.
Yeah, just for privacy reasons. And
so it's good to know I didn't forget. Yeah. I never knew in the first place. So that's good. I feel better.
But, you know, we spent a lot of time there and we got to know the various residents and mm-hmm. then we, you know, determined who would be our narrator, which was, he's the youngest resident of the nursing home. And he's kind of in a unique position because he's more confined than everyone else is because mm-hmm. he's paralyzed. He can't move, but his mind is intact, whereas everyone else around him, for the most part, you know, their minds and their bodies are beginning to go.
Sure.
So he was in this unique position. He's also a very kind of soulful and very funny human being.
Mm.
So we recognized early on his kind of storytelling abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of his major forms of entertainment is gossiping about the various residents. So he made a natural kind of narrator for the piece. And we worked with him on the narration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the stories that he tells are his own. But sometimes we would work with him and ask him, you know, can you slow it down? Can you pare it down?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So we could really get, you know, to the heart of the matter with him. And he really delivered. So I think that's why, you know, that piece feels maybe more kind of cinematic than, you know, a traditional kind of documentary.
Yes.
You know, because there are a lot of different characters that he loves to talk about, and he always talks about the various characters in a very kind of storied way.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did you feel, when you went into this, that there were influences? I mean, one can be influenced by a filmmaker or a film and then end up with a very, very different end product, certainly.
Right.
So,
well, I can only speak for myself. Maybe Brian has a different answer, but I didn't mm-hmm. approach the project with any other kind of project in mind, film or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you.
No, you know, and that's really not to say. I mean, of course, we're influenced by so much, and we take in a lot of. We're both avid readers, and mm-hmm. Music is very important to us, and as is film, but not. Having come from a foundation in film, there were a lot of obvious touchstones for the Patron Saints that we hadn't even seen beforehand. For example, Titty Cut Follies.
Right. Well, that was one that I didn't want to see.
We hadn't even seen that film.
Right.
And I find it's really interesting when somebody tells you, this reminds me of something else. And then we'll go and track it down in the same way that if somebody said to you, you look a little bit like so-and-so.
Yeah.
Like the first thing you want to do is Google that person and make
sure they're good looking.
Yeah. Right? make sure they're strikingly handsome. Yeah.
I think John Goodman is good looking. I don't know. So I take it as a compliment, but go ahead.
And so often that's what will happen is we'll sort of be, somebody else will tell us you should look at this work or that work. And then it's always interesting to compare.
Yeah. I mean, and you're not, it's not verite. I mean, it's not, and it's, you're not in any, I would not necessarily think that this would remind me of a Frederick Wiseman film, but the institutional side of it is maybe like, could be a touchstone, as you put it, or springboard or something.
Sure. And I mean, I think that what it sounds like, what Frederick Wiseman does, is the idea of institutions and places where people gather for whatever reason, but that there are clear walls that provide an inherent structure to an otherwise a little bit more maybe free form kind of expression within reality. I think that was something that was interesting to us as well, is that you can go a lot of different places structurally and be a little more free form if you know that you have these inherent boundaries of an institution.
Right.
And it sounds like that's been Wiseman's thing since he started. And
yes. So guys, this is the part of the show where we get really personal. Where did you guys originally meet?
Well, we met in 2004 at the School of Visual Arts. We were both doing an MFA in photography and video. And we met during orientation. And
like the first day?
I don't think it was the first day. I think it was the second. I think maybe there were two days of orientation. We met on the second day.
Mm-hmm.
And but we didn't have any classes together that first semester, but we shared an editing suite. And Brian and I, would both stay really long hours until midnight, 1 a.m, working on our respective projects.
Mm-hmm.
And we really kind of responded to each other's work and would distract the other from our own work. And, by the end of that first year of school, I think the last day of that first year we were dating.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a little bit of a foundation of kind of almost a working style, for lack of another term, together already, in that you were bouncing things off each other and giving each other that kind of feedback. And
Definitely. We really kind of like respected the other person's opinion. And at that point, our styles were kind of quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, at this point, like 8 years down the road, the styles have become kind of meshed and, it's kind of
indecipherable.
Yeah.
It's kind of like indecipherable now whose sensibility was which. I mean, it was early on, there was, we just had different approaches to wanting to see essentially the same thing on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And you could sort of more clearly identify those different approaches. Melanie had more of a bit of a remove. She would kind of take in a whole scene and there would be a kind of, how would you describe it? A more static, considered approach to what, was on screen. And then for me, I had a little more of a looser kinetic approach. And so those two, kinds of attitudes together really created a nice hybrid.
Sure.
But now it just all sort of, it's all gone to shit now.
But at the same time, Brian will be like, can we put that on a tripod? And I'll be like, no, it has to be handheld.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways we've done like a switch, like a full 180.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And I know that you said you were working on patron scenes for like over a span of 5 years. Mm-hmm. Francine was during that 5 year period.
Yep.
And it was during a, like kind of a break in there, or were you kind of oscillating? No. And
yeah, we were kind of going from one project to the next. But Francine, mm-hmm. we wrote the script in 2007. We shot it in 2010 and then released it in 2012.
Mm.
So it was over a period of also 5 years.
Was one of your, was it really both kind of this hybrid that you describe, or was one of you kind of the driving sort of, I don't know, were one of you more the pilot, you know, in either of the productions, or did you just, it was really
not really.
Kind of,
I mean, it just kind of bounces back and forth. I mean, we're together all the time.
Yeah.
We really spend all our time together turning these things over in our heads.
Yeah.
Looking to the other for confirmation on an idea. And like an idea for one of us isn't really validated until the other is interested in it. So it just kind of always goes back and forth in a way. There's no real hierarchy within the way we create.
I am in there, as I said, you know, at the beginning, I am in their home, and I can tell you that, they live on opposite sides of the apartment. They don't speak. When I came in, one said, you know, ask Brian that, I don't know. And then he's like, well, tell Melanie. So this is a really good working relationship. I think that this is a good approach. I think it'll last many, many, many years to come. I think. So speaking of, I kid. Do you have, of course you have ideas for upcoming projects. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are plenty. So is there anything that sort of on the horizon, or?
Yeah, we're working on a new project right now. We're working on a script. We can't tell you very mm-hmm. much, though. It's a little mm-hmm. early to talk about, but something we're very excited about.
Okay.
It'll be.
There must the only be thing I can tease tell you us a little.
I don't know. I can't tell you very much other than it's going to take place in a seaside town.
Oh.
That's it.
That we can commit to saying that at this point. That it's
okay.
Going to take place in a seaside town.
Okay.
But yeah, we're really
Hope it's not called the bathtub, because I think that idea has been stolen.
Oh yeah, no, I've heard about that. I've heard that something about that had quite a bit of success. Yeah.
what do you make of Beasts of the Southern Wild in terms of its? I mean, I think we were sitting together. Yeah, we were sitting right behind me and Jonathan.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Lisecki, when we all saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beasts together. Yeah.
I think it's a great achievement for independent film. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm really rooting those guys on. I think it's ambitious in scope. I think
it's really beautiful, and the young girl is such a powerhouse too.
Right.
You know, there's so much, you know, she holds so much kind of emotion within just her little body.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of astounding. And the score, yes. I thought was amazing.
Yes.
Like, I found that so moving.
Did you see the short, Glory at Sea?
No. Because
you should
no,
check that out. Yeah.
That.
You can see it on Vimeo. And it's sort of a, like, you know, a same, it feels like the same little universe, part of the same
right.
sort of area. Mm. Yeah, but I was going to say about the young girl who plays Hush Puppy, Ms. Wallace. Like, I can... She actually, I was thinking about it. I was sitting there one day, and I was just like, you know, she reminded me of the performance of like a young Tatum O'Neill, that the kind of power that you were describing, that mouth that so set, and she was had this, yet she, you know, the eyes, I mean, and her timing and her natural grace on camera, unbelievable.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because that had come to my mind as well.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it's rare to see a child so young.
Yeah.
Giving such a charged performance, but I had that thought too.
Yeah, I mean, nuanced and yeah, deep. She's able to go deep. She gets what she's doing, and I think Tatum O'Neill was one of the rare child actors that did the same thing at such an early age. You know, it's quite remarkable. Let's go through just again. I'm going to mention this the details of your screenings again, because that is two very exciting things coming up. So, well, this time we'll go chronologically. Francine will be at the Howard Gilman Theater at Lincoln Center on Wednesday, August 1st at 8 o'clock. So if you're hearing this, please, and if you haven't seen Francine, or even if you have, go get the tickets right away because I'm sure it's going to sell out. And then on the 4th, only 3 days later, on Saturday, August 4th, Patron Saints will be at Rooftop Films. And the evening begins at 8 o'clock, but I know that Rooftop starts with live music. And do you know right. who that is?
We don't know.
Okay.
We're actually very curious to see what they pair with the Patron Saints.
But it's at the...
What kind of music do you think, if you had to pick the music that would open the film, what do you think would be a dirge?
No. For Patron Saints at Rooftop Films, what would the band be? Bluegrass. I'm sticking with it. Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting question. That is different. Who knows? I mean, I think... Upbeat, maybe nothing too navel gazing, maybe something a little bit more up tempo. I think it's a movie. You know, I interviewed
Chaka Khan.
I interviewed Mark Rosenberg though, Mark Elijah Rosenberg, some months ago, right before the season for Rooftop, and we talked specifically. If you listen to the show, if you haven't, about Patron Saints. And, you know, he talked also, one of the things he said is how much humor and grace these people have in the film. So, you know, he said, we don't normally laugh because usually we're seeing these people at the end of their lives when their faculties are diminishing. And we're all scared of our mortality and of aging and mm-hmm. not being able to do what we used to do. But in a way, like we laugh at little toddlers when they, not when they trip and hurt themselves, but what the silly things they do. That it's okay sometimes to find the humor also in these people's lives.
I think it is okay. I think, humor is as complicated of an expression of emotion as anything else.
Yeah.
So humor, the kind of complicated humor in our work, it's okay. It's okay to laugh. It's okay because it does. It's not poking fun at people. It's something
life.
Else. It's life, and it's life is surprising, defies expectation. Mm-hmm. And often, sometimes you laugh simply because you've never seen something, you've never experienced something before. You're expecting one thing, and something else happens. And this happens a lot in our mm-hmm. work. It's the other side of tragedy, and some laughter gets caught in your throat, it gets halfway out and then it comes back. And
yeah.
We like that in between space. We think it's an honest place, an honest expression of emotion.
And worth exploring.
And absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you guys. Film Wax Radio here at B-Box. I should mention, coming up with the Film Wax film series, that this Wednesday, just after the show will stream at 6:30 to 7. At 7 o'clock at the Brooklyn Society for Ethical Culture, FilmWax is launching its Brooklyn Reconstructed series, where every month we're going to be playing a different documentary which explores the themes of gentrification and development in our borough of Brooklyn. And we'll start with Kelly Anderson and Allison Lierish-Dean's film, My Brooklyn. And then every month we'll be continuing with a different film, and so it's very exciting. And we're going to have panels after each film, and we're going to bring activists, politicians, filmmakers, of course, and neighbors, community organizers to each of these panels. And so I really encourage everybody to come out and check it out. There is a $5 suggested admission, but we're not turning anybody away. So again, that's at the Brooklyn Society for Ethical Culture at 53 Prospect Park West in Park Slope, starting Wednesday, the 25th of July. So thank you, Melanie and Brian, and thank you to the folks at B-Box Radio for making this show possible. This is Adam Shartoff. Thank you very much. Good night.
This is as good as it gets.